everyone. Welcome to Maximizing Your Life with your host, Dr. Regina Banks Paul. Today on our podcast show, we're sitting down with a native Detroiter, successful entrepreneur, and author of the book, The Hamster Wheel, Mr. Michael Anthony Hall. Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Regina Banks Paul, and welcome to Maximizing Your Life. I'm sitting here today with Michael Anthony Hall, the author of The Hamster Wheel. Michael, let's just take a moment and just have you say hello to our audience today.
Hello, audience. How are you? I'm glad to have you. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, today, Michael, my podcast focuses on maximizing your life. I believe that every individual that is born has a purpose and a destiny. And often we have to share information in various ways so that people can really understand how they can maximize their life. One of the things that I found that our stories, as it relates to what we have to overcome, are somewhat similar, and sometimes we can all learn from each other. So today I want to focus on you and your success, and I want the audience to learn about your book, The Hamster Wheel, but really something about you and how you have become the master that you are of your fate. And so the first thing that I want to ask you, how did your journey towards entrepreneurship begin?
Wow. My journey towards entrepreneurship began when I was around 11 or 12. And I have one of the, a great family. And my brother and my father really instilled a work ethic in me. And I was raking leaves and shoveling snow on the mean streets of Detroit and all that. And, you know, kind of got a niche for working for myself, you know?
Okay, very, very good.
Yeah, kind of got a niche for that. And then along with that, when you're 12 or 13 and you have money in your pocket and stuff like that, it's a good feeling. So my brother was probably the biggest proponent because he was hustle man.
Okay.
Yeah, he was hustle man, and then he kind of instilled that in me, my brother, and my father, specifically my brother. And that's when it started.
So you learned from watching them.
Yeah. From watching them, definitely your environment is important. I had a really good environment, a really good home environment, and that inspired me to do what I do.
All right. Very, very good. So, Michael, I've read your new book, The Hamster Wheel, and it's been out for a couple years. And to our audience, please go to Amazon and you will find the book, The Hamster Wheel. It is an excellent read, and he really shares some tips on how you can navigate life, and we will get into that shortly. Can you share with our audience the concept of the hamster on the wheel?
Well, actually, all you need to do is look around. If you just look around and see that most people are working every day, more than likely a job that they don't like, and they're not making the money that they would like to make. And they're just on that hamster wheel grinding every day to pay those bills and maybe take a vacation every now and then. Mm-hmm. So if you look around, the hamster wheel is everywhere. It's right in front of you.
It is an excellent point. Why do people have a hard time getting off of the hamster wheel? What is the major reason that you think that keeps them on the wheel?
In my opinion, let me state that.
Okay,
first.
That's good.
In my opinion, we are taught to be good hamsters. So from the time we're little, you know, we're taught, you know, go to school, get a good job, to get that white picket fence. And that's those 2.5 kids and, you know, live a great life. They don't talk to you about the debt that you're in. They don't talk to you. I mean, most people out there, regardless of color, don't have financial conversations at the dinner table about, you know, money and resources.
It's important. Their focus, and if I've and you can add more to this, that I believe what you're saying is that we're just taught just to do just enough, you know, get a job, not really dream about what life could be, but more so just stay within parameters.
It's important that when you say we, I mean, we is collective. We is 95% of Americans. It has nothing to do with color.
Yes.
Or anything like that. It's just us. We're taught to be that battery that charges that machine. That's what we're taught to do. So how many people, when you're young, or your kids, my son is here with me now, how many times have I talked to my son about entrepreneurship? A lot. But what do you think most people, when I was young, my father and my mother, they didn't really understand or push me towards entrepreneurship. They were pushing me, because that's all they knew to do, right into that system that feeds you to make somebody else money.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to you to look at yourself as to believe that you can step outside the box, that you can dream big. It's one of the things that I like to focus on is that the only limitations that I have are the ones that I put on myself. And if I'm willing to work for it, I can actually push myself. But I agree with you that often that's not the vision that's presented to us. It's presented to us, just work, just get a job, trying to own a house, have a couple kids, work, go on a vacation, and just to continue that same cycle. So is a good point.
Yeah, I also want to say I have fantastic parents. You heard me say that.
Yes.
And still have fantastic parents, but all they knew is what they knew.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, I remember my mom really never knew what I did, and I would never keep a job for more than 3 years, okay?
Okay.
And so I remember talking to her one day, and she's like, baby, you know, you got to keep a job. You got to keep a job and work on that job and stay with that job. She didn't know I was investing in real estate, or she didn't know what I was trying to do. But to her, I seemed like a failure because I couldn't do what the system had us designed to do.
Okay, yes. And that is a good point. And so sometimes you can be... When you look at our parents and possibly, you know, their parents as well, is that we make our decisions based on the environment of the things that are around us at that time. And as each generation gets a chance to grow and be exposed to different opportunities, that can change what we do.
Now, your question regarding one of the major reasons why people stay on the hamster wheel, or I guess you asked for the major reason. In my mind, there's a couple. One is fear. People are just, you know, fear of failure, fear of change. I spoke about this in the book, and I'm from the hood, so or middle class Detroit, I should say. And I spoke about how we have people in low income areas and areas where it's crime ridden. Okay. So now you have that family that's staying on that block and their kids are walking through needles to go to school.
Okay.
And then down on the block, someone got shot recently. So the question is, why don't they move?
Okay.
Right? So so people go, well, I can't afford it. But you can't afford to stay.
Okay.
You understand that?
Yeah.
Right. So it's a lot of that is the fear. It's the fear.
Fear. Okay.
You know, it's fear. The other part is education.
Okay.
The other part is, like we discussed, 95% of Americans, I would guess, don't have financial conversations at the dinner table. They don't speak about different multiple sources of income and, more importantly, failure, how failure is a part of your success.
You know, and you bring up a good point, because many people view failure as a definition of who they are. But failure provides a learning opportunity. And if you do not fail at something, you won't know what you're made of, because it's going to test you. And I've learned that in my own journey, the impact of failure, the lessons that I have learned from failure, because now it presents me with an opportunity to change something, to make it better. And so it is important that we encourage people not to look at failure in that capacity that I failed, that this is going to hinder me from becoming successful. But look at the lessons that we can learn from failure and how we can use a failure to still push ourselves forward.
And that's a major leap.
Yes.
From the environment where your parent or your parent is just going to work every day, trying to make ends meet, trying to pay the bills, and you're discussing failure? No, that don't happen.
Yes.
You discuss how I can get another job to pay that bill, mm-hmm. or how you need to turn those lights off so that bill is not so high.
High, yes, yeah. That is true. Very, very good. Anything else you think that you want to share about why people have a hard time getting off that hamster wheel?
I think other than fear and mm-hmm. education, mm-hmm. It's kind of like we're indoctrinated on the wheel. Mm-hmm. You're placed on the wheel. You're told from the day you grow up, in America at least, at my experience, is that you need to go to school and get good grades and then get those good grades and then get a good job and then work somewhere for 30 years and then retire. They didn't tell you about the stock market going down and people mm-hmm. losing their retirements. They don't, mm-hmm. they don't discuss all those things. Nor do they.
That is true.
Yeah. Nor do they discuss how most people go to school and then they're ridden with student loan debt, and then a lot of them don't even work in the field that they went to school for.
That is true. And so we have to, and even in that area of people who have went to school and have degrees, of looking at how you can take your education and still use it in another way within the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so it really is important to give people options. And that's why what you have written is so relevant, because it allows you to see life from a different perspective, to step outside that box and say, this is not the only way. I do have other options. And sometimes people can just be victims because they do not have access to the information.
It's funny you say that, because the book was written. I wrote the book. It's 2018 now. I wrote the book in 2013 and didn't finish it. So I didn't finish it because chapter two, which now chapter two is the haves and have nots. Mm-hmm. Chapter two was I wanted to be able to show what people did with money. So okay. I wanted to be able to take somebody from the hood or someplace that doesn't really know money and show them money. Okay. So okay. I went on the internet and I grabbed this article about cell phones that are $100,000 and all this stuff that rich people were buying, and sent the whole book to the editor. And okay. the editor came back and said, well, I needed permission to use that. And so I couldn't get permission. I couldn't find it. And I didn't feel like I didn't know enough about people with money. You understand okay. that? Right. So 2 years later, I decided to just write about my life. Now, understand. Yes, I have my own businesses, and my life is pretty good by the grace of God. And yep. so I was able to write about my life for chapter two. So okay. chapter two, I tell you how every morning I get up and go have breakfast, and then I decide to go in the office, and then I may stay in the office for a couple hours and then go out and maybe look at real estate or whatever. And so I gave them a little snapshot of my life because, like you say, you want people to look outside of where they are.
Yes, it is definitely important that they learn from everyday ordinary people that you can do some exceptional things, that you don't have to become a star to have an impact. You can impact lives where you are. In your book, you spoke of the American dream. Do you feel that the American dream is still a reality today? And if so, how do we get there?
I think the American dream, the book takes it back a long time ago where they first started it. I'm forgetting the year, but, you okay. know, Old West and everybody going west and things like that. I think the modern day American dream can definitely be achieved, whatever your American dream is. Remember, the American dream used to be the house, the car, the white picket fence, 2.5 kids, the cat, the dog, that whole thing. As I look at that now, and where I'm at from my position mentally and things like that and the things I've learned, yeah, absolutely. The American dream, depending on what you want it to
what
be,
what you want the dream
is
to be,
attainable. Absolutely, it's attainable. Absolutely. Let me tell you something. America is a great country. Even though we're going through some trials and tribulations right now in the White House and stuff like that, America is a great country to thrive in. Mm-hmm. You understand?
I share that with my students on the university all the time about the people that come here, that start businesses, that change the lives for their families, that go through so many things to get here because they believe that once they get here and have that opportunity, that they can change their destiny. And it's that same type of opportunity that I feel that we have to encourage our young people, especially, to want to take on and say, you know what, I have opportunities. If I believe in myself, if I push myself, if I find good mentors and I'm able to actually make some changes, and I can still make that dream a reality. But I do agree with you that it ties to a point that you mentioned. It's what you want that dream to be. And so each person has to make that decision on how they view the dream for themselves. So that part, I believe, is very good.
Howard Schultz is in the book. He's Starbucks, I believe.
Yes, he is.
And Howard Schultz grew up in the hood. And his father, I believe, was a plumber or something like that. From Starbucks, the hood, all the way to Starbucks to a billionaire. David Karp, I'm not sure I spoke about him in that book. David Karp is a guy, I think, I don't want to mess it up. I think it's one of the websites, either Tumblr or something like that. And he was coding at like 13.
Okay.
And he sold his website.
Okay.
You know, so it's America is right here for you. And it's not changing. It's not changing anytime soon. It's right here for you to take the reins and just go for it and get it.
It is true. And it starts a lot with vision. It starts with you having that vision and not being afraid of your vision and willing to push yourself and step outside of your comfort zone. And sometimes in stepping outside your comfort zone, you have to step away from some people. You have to leave them because they can hold you back and hinder you from wanting to embrace what you believe is your gift or your calling. And I found that in my own life, and often when I'm talking to people and having a coaching session with them, that's one of the things that they share with me, the impact of why it is important to step outside your comfort zone and step away from people so that you can actually follow your dream.
Thoughts are things. Most entrepreneurs, even before I wrote my book, I looked at the people before me. So the books that I've read before me, I mean, Think and Grow Rich, Thoughts Are Things, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And they all talk about positive, keeping positive people around you.
Yes.
And in
a lot of cases,
shedding negative people, even though sometimes they may be your family and friends and close friends. And yeah, it's all true. It's all true. My circle is really, really small right now.
In a vision board workshop that I conduct, I often talk about not just the vision of putting it on the board, but also the impact of the strategy, the impact of your inner circle, the people that you share the vision with, and then also the belief that you actually have to have in yourself. So it is important as you bring up that point of understanding who you allow in your space, who you share your dreams with, because you can't share them with everybody. Everybody is not meant to learn your dreams. And sometimes that does include family members. So you do have to find those people that are forward moving that you can share those with and put those right mentors in your life as well. Yeah. So these are some excellent points that you are bringing up. I noticed in your book that you left home early. What did you learn from that experience?
Oh, leaving Detroit?
Yes.
Wow. First and foremost, there are places out there where it doesn't get so cold in the wintertime. That's like the first. I tell people stories about when I was here, when I was young, and they don't believe me. Then I call my brother, and he has to confirm them. So what did I learn from leaving home?
Mm-hmm. Yes, what did you learn?
The first thing I learned is I have a dynamic family because I didn't leave home with fear.
Okay.
If anything happened, I could have made a phone call and been right back home.
Okay. So that's an important
part.
Yeah,
I moved out with courage.
Okay.
Not with fear.
Okay.
And I moved to Atlantic City. I think because I was kind of prepared for it from so young to be working on my own and things like that. There's a lot of stuff, other stuff in the book. So to me, it was like a proving ground too. You know, it was like, okay, I know I can do this. I know I can. And this is before I even thought about entrepreneurship per se. It was just me out there, the average Joe, looking for a job, getting the job, doing the things like that.
Okay.
So then I learned from having jobs. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, I was that guy. I was always that guy. I was the go-to guy. You know, if I was sweeping floors, the floors were really clean. If I was mopping them, they were clean. That work ethic. You know,
okay.
I went out there with that.
Okay. And do you use your work ethic? Was that part of what helped you create your different business entities?
Yeah, it's more like a foundation.
Okay.
Yeah, more like a foundation.
Okay. Okay.
The whole real estate thing, I invest in real estate. The whole real estate thing came from me painting walls at Sears.
Wow.
Yeah, I was maintenance at Sears in New Jersey, and I would have to paint a lot. So while I was painting, because remember, if you don't have time to think, right? If mm-hmm. you're just worried about going to work and you're getting home and getting the kids together and this and that and doing it all and going back to work and doing that vicious cycle, when do you have time to think?
Very true.
Yeah, you don't have time to think. So I had time to think.
Okay.
Okay, so I always had 2 and 3 jobs, right? And then while I was sitting there painting those walls at Sears, I was saying I wanted to make an impact on my family back here, and I wanted to live and be financially independent, and I was just thinking of ways that I could do it. What it boiled down to is this. I said, if I sell potato chips, chips sell for like 35 cents, I guess I'm going to get like maybe 5 cents a chip.
Okay.
I said, well, I sell sodas. Sodas may pops may sell for 55 cents back then. I'll probably get 10 cents. I said, well, if it's based on the product that you have, right?
Yes.
Then I think I need to be in houses.
Okay.
Get it?
Yes. So,
and that's what happened. And then I start research from there that the top 10 billionaires all have real estate. The top 10 millionaires all have real estate. And people who were living like I wanted to live had investments in real estate.
Okay.
And that's exactly what happened.
Okay. So you've talked about some of the things that you researched, and that leads me to another question that I want to ask you. What are some of the books that you have read that you believe really changed your life?
Wow. You know, it's amazing. It really is, because Think and Grow Rich is like the Bible to the entrepreneur. So
yes.
When you meet a lot of entrepreneurs, most of them have read Think and Grow Rich
yes.
by Napoleon Hill.
Yes, they have.
And what he's done is he looked at successful people and wrote a book about their traits and what they do and what they are. And
okay.
It's awesome. The next book, and I don't read. That's the funny thing. I really don't read. I don't read for fun and stuff. I'll read if something's going to help me.
You're reading for information.
There you go. That's it. So the next book was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. That book is awesome. It
yes.
really is.
That's an excellent book.
Some other books I've read, The Millionaire Next Door,
okay.
Ordinary People, Extraordinary Wealth. I think that rounds it out right about now.
Okay. All right. Very, very good. So to the audience, to people that are sitting out there that are listening to us today, what 3-step plan of advice would you give someone who wants to get off of the hamster wheel?
Wow. 3-step.
And if you only have 2, that's fine.
How about more?
Okay.
I'm not sitting here saying it's easy, because it's not. You have to understand that. It takes a lot of sacrifice and dedication. It really does. Mm-hmm.
And that's true for any entrepreneur, whatever your vision, whatever the drive, the purpose, it does require sacrifice. And you do have to understand that it is not going to be easy, that you will have to push yourself, that you will have to maintain that vision and that belief in your dream. I often say to people, you have to treat it just like a baby, because you birthed it. It's your vision. And so you have to take care of it, feed it, nurture it, just like you would a new child.
So the first step, if I kind of walk you through the book kind of does that.
Okay.
But I'm kind of silly. So when I wrote the book, so you would have a nice time reading the book.
Okay.
And so I actually wrote the book on an iPad too. I wrote the book. The book is only an hour and a half read, because people really don't read anymore. So I wanted to get something that was clear, concise, and something that you didn't have to labor with.
For a long time.
It's a quick read.
Yes.
So I wrote the book on an iPad. And then as I was reading the book, I would go to breakfast and I would have, people read parts of the book, you know. And so I might have spoke about the young lady in the book. She was the waitress at the restaurant. So here I am thinking, okay, I have a dynamic book that's going to help people and give you a lot of information, and it's funny, and that'll keep you, in energized on the material. You know, okay, I'm going to go. So I would let people read the book, and then they would get sad. I mean, I'm like, tell me, you know, the funniest part of the book. And they would be convicted, because the first part of the book, like you said, a three-step plan is to see where you are financially.
Mm-hmm. And you have to, sometimes in life, it requires that you really look at yourself to really understand who you are. And one of the most important things that we do have to understand is our finances. And when you can really see yourself, then you really understand what you have to do to make changes so that you can actually move forward.
So the book has you write down all your expenses and your income and everything like that. And by the time they read that part and started looking at their financial picture, it wasn't funny no more.
Mm-hmm.
So the first step, though, is you have to self-evaluate. You have to look at all of your expenses and all of your income. It's simple to say that if my income is much more than my expenses, I'm living pretty good. Right?
Yes. So,
and that's the simple answer. The simple answer is, how can I get my income to be 10 times the amount of my expenses? Then I have disposable money. Then I'm not living as a slave on the hamster wheel and things like that. But to get there, now you got to analyze your finances and see where you can cut, what expenses you can cut, and how you can get more income.
Okay.
And it's not really easy when you have single mothers. Hats off to single mothers everywhere. Because mm-hmm. they're struggling to make everything work.
That is true.
And then you telling me that I need to cut expenses, how am I going to do that? Well, like I said, there's a bunch of single women out there who have been really successful too. And
yes,
they've had to make that sacrifice as well.
Yes,
so
that is true.
It may be uncomfortable, but it's something that you have to do. Mm-hmm. So the first phase is to look at your financial picture. Then the second phase is going to be do something. A lot of people get paralyzed, or you read the book. Oh, it was a good book. And then 2 years later, well, did you apply anything to the book? No, I didn't apply anything.
Okay.
So the second thing is, you got to read the information and you have to move on it. So you know how they say, knowledge is power? That's so untrue. To me, it's so untrue. Applied knowledge can be power.
It is the application of the knowledge. Because you can have a lot of information, right. But if you do not do nothing with the information, it's just information. It is definitely the application of the knowledge.
So now that's two, right? So the first thing is you have to understand where you are financially.
Yes.
The second thing is you have to take action.
Okay.
In most cases, it's going to be to reduce your debt, you know, reduce or restructure your debt.
Okay.
When the real estate bubble burst, I might have put this in the book. When the real estate bubble burst, people were finding themselves upside down in their mortgage. So, okay, your house is now only worth $95,000, but your mortgage was based on $200,000.
Okay.
You know, so now you're paying based on $200,000 and you lost your job because GM moved the jobs out. You know, what do you do? So I was one of the first people to say, even before Susie Orman, walk away. You just got to walk away from that. What do you mean? My credit, my this, how you going to eat? Is your credit worth more than you and your family eating?
Okay.
Are you paying, does it really make sense for you to be paying that $1,500 mortgage on a $200,000 house that's not only worth $95,000? Or are you to be back on the mortgage? And then, you know, no, Detroit is a great place to discuss this because, as you know, we was a budding metropolis way back then when I was here. You know, all the motor, the companies were here. Everybody was making money, you know, and then it seemed like it was a one-trick pony when the auto industry went down because all the ancillary markets went down.
Yes.
People who were making the starters, the people who were making the solenoids and all that got hit hard. So, you know, again, you don't want to be a one-trick pony. You want to analyze where you are. You want to take action to do something about it. You know, and most importantly, you want to share that information with your kids. That's the third step.
Okay.
Because if not, we'll be perpetually in this.
Okay.
My son is here with me right now.
So, and that part is important that we take our knowledge and our information and we do pass it on, that we share it with our family members, with our friends, so that we can break the cycle.
Yeah.
And that we can begin to make change and actually change lives. Well, it has been a pleasure having you on the podcast today. As we get ready to close, what final words do you want to share with the audience? We're at the end of a year and we're getting ready to go into a new year in a couple of days. What words of wisdom do you have for our audience today that will transform them in 2019?
I have a couple. Well, not just 2019. I like the whole podcast, Maximizing Your Life.
Yes, my title?
Yeah.
Yes, Maximizing Your Life.
Yeah, Maximizing Your Life, because the book talks about, are you living or are you just existing?
Yes.
You know, and I think the sharing of information, it's an information age right now, and the sharing of information is so important.
Yes, it is.
I think the message that I would give your audience, who are those of you who are on the hamster wheel, is that you can get off. You can get off. And you can live a better life. And I did it.
And if you can do it,
trust me,
then so can someone that is listening.
Trust me. I'm from 16531 North Line in Detroit, Michigan. Went to Fitzgerald Elementary, post junior high, went to Henry Ford High School, right with everybody else. And if I could do it, and you can definitely do it.
Okay. You know? And I hope the audience is listening. What he's saying is that if he can do it, you can do it. It starts with vision. It starts with belief in yourself. It starts with identifying your goals and dreams and believing that you are worthy of success. You have been listening to Maximizing Your Life with Dr. Regina Banks Hall. And my guest today was Michael Anthony Hall, the author of The Hamster Wheel and the book, Ask asks a very important question. Are you on the hamster wheel? You can find this book on Amazon. Please go to Amazon.com and search for, again, The Hamster Wheel. It has been our pleasure to share information with you today. As we move forward, know that you can do anything you want to do if you believe in yourself. And know that we believe in you. Otherwise, we would not be here today talking about how you can maximize your life.
Thank you.
Thank you.